Dear Mom, I know you've tried to protect me from who I am, and you've said my life before you adopted me doesn't matter, but it does matter. It matters because I still have visions of the place where I was born. I've heard all the whispers. I know what happened in that town where I was born. And I know you've tried to protect me from its horror for 19 years. Well, today I'm going back to that little abandoned town called Gatlin. Home to the truth. Love, Hannah.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Children of the Corn series, part of the 3-Minute Retrospectives look at the film adaptations of author Stephen King.
Give yourself. It's his will.
Join Garrett.
Don't underestimate the power of my vision.
Matt.
He speaks to me always, but today he is displeased.
And Adam.
Is this how they come to a complete stop in California?
As they find out who of the three of them really agrees with he who walks behind the rose.
He who walks behind the rose will decide your fate.
Will the three podcasters survive this trek through rows and rows of corn?
I got your eternal flame right here!
Find out next, courtesy of Percolated Media.
Come on, let's go!
Children of the Corn, 666, Isaac's Return, released October 19th, 1999, and this was directed by Carrie Skoglund. She would actually go on to work on The Falcon and the Winter Soldier after this.
Yes, so if you want to know why that series sucks, stay tuned.
They stole my line.
She also worked on The Killing. She did a couple episodes of that show as well. But here we are, returning to Children of the Corn, and somebody else is returning to Children of the Corn, boys. Someone by the name of John Franklin. Now, John Franklin was the head evil kid in that first Children of the Corn film. And we mentioned on that podcast that he had gotten a little bit of notoriety because not only did he do this film, he had a few commercials and things at the time. But here's a shock. After that movie came out, he didn't really get much work after that. 15 years had gone by, and finally, he went to the studio himself. He went to Dimension Films. He said, look, I have seen this series just kind of go by the wayside and no continuity whatsoever. I have a great idea I would like to do, and the studio greenlit it. Now, it is debatable whether he had a quote-unquote great idea or he needed a paycheck, but here we are. 15 years after the first film, we have Children of the Corn 666. We kind of discussed this a little bit last week, but Adam, I mean, this was an idea hatched from John Franklin himself. Were you at all looking forward to the continuity from this film to the first film?
No, because it had been so far in between, it felt desperate. I mean, and I'm using that for, one, Stephen King, so duh. But man, no, this just, and if you're going to do it, why would you do it in a direct-to-video 6 version of it? If you're doing this, you bust it out in theaters, you make a big deal. So, no, this had nothing in it that made me go, ooh, Isaac's back. I figured it would be nothing more than a cameo. I was like, okay, so they're going to market this off the fact that he's back, but I'm sure they're not going to do anything with it. And that was my thought.
You're not far off saying it was much more than a cameo, but we'll get to the film here in a bit. All right, Goudreau. You and me have kind of liked a few more of these films than Adam has. Were you at all looking forward to Isaac's return here?
I just love how his pitch was, I have this great idea, but it requires me being the center of it. So, look, I walk into these movies expecting the floor. So anytime I go from the floor to my bottom cabinet, I will take it as a win. But yeah, by the time you get to the 6th installment of a franchise I don't like, what the fuck do you think you're going to sell me on? This was the one thing they had. It was like this or Malachi were the two like realistic characters you could bring back that the quote-unquote fans of this series, all 8 of them listening to this podcast, would have some kind of joy in returning. Unless they were actually going to do a worldwide perspective, like the end of 3 teases, but look, these movies are made for $5 in a Snickers bar, so I don't think they could show 2 towns, let alone 1.
Well, John Franklin got with a friend of his by the name of Tim Sulca. They got together and wrote this script. And they hire this Carrie Skoglund to direct it. And she, this is not going to be a shock to anybody, she was not a fan of horror before she took this gig.
That's telling me everything I need to know.
she took it as a challenge. She took the job as a challenge to herself after meeting with Franklin and the other co-writer. So that's where we are. And again, we're going to discuss whether or not this was a paycheck movie or not for this guy. But according to him, it was a big passion project. And he has done cons since. He is one I have not met yet. So we open up with the sun peeking over the clouds. And guess what? We have a credit that we've also recognized from a previous King adaptation. Nancy Allen, welcome back to Stephen King territory. Matt, did she do anything after Brian De Palma dumped her? I don't think so.
Well, did she get killed off in RoboCop before or after she divorced from Brian De Palma?
I think that was after, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so it's these two. No, the other one she had was Poltergeist 3.
Yeah, that's right. Which is a series I hope to get to one day.
Yeah, because of that movie, I'm sure. I mean, she's done, I'm trying to think of the, outside of like that. I mean, after this, the most you'll see her in is those In Search of Darkness documentaries.
Oh, that's right, yeah. She's on Facebook all the time, too. Like, she posts on Facebook a lot.
It's not like she's working.
Yeah, that's true. Adam, you know, as somebody who, you know, you went through Carrie with us, we went through that whole series. I mean, were you at least looking forward to seeing Nancy Allen back in King territory?
I thought that was good, you know, to have somebody that I recognize and that I think has the ability to act, or at least is a friendly face that I recognize, I thought that was kind of cool. I don't think I've seen her in anything since the abysmally overrated Out of Sight George Clooney J-Lo jam. But yeah, I was like, okay, it's, you have somebody who I can at least connect with.
You know, I've never seen that.
But, you know,
I've never seen Out of Sight.
I saw it in theaters and I have thoughts, okay. So let's never discuss it.
Go ahead.
But like most people, I want to hear her call out Murphy. You know, she's RoboCop.
Mm. A kid is walking through the fields. Here's something we haven't seen before. Scythe in hand. And we see a body fall to the ground as the sun comes up. We hear a letter from a girl who has visions of what has happened to her. And she says that she's going back to Gatlin to find out the truth.
Because nothing says we're going to give you quality than a voiceover exposition intro.
Fuck.
This town hasn't been burned to cinder yet. How is this place still functioning if all these people keep dying?
You need Dustin Hoffman to show up and frickin' just bring in a bomber of nuke and just please get rid of this town.
Just do the ending of Return of the Living Dead where they just nuked the town.
They just nuked the town, yeah.
Yep.
Which EVP's second EVP movie just stole. Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad idea. Nuke the town and have it rebuilt where it's nothing but a... You know what? Put a pin in that. Garrett, we need to make some meetings for the 3rd dimension.
She wipes a bug off her windshield and stops for a guy who says he needs a ride to Gatlin. She says that she's going there anyway and agrees to give him a ride. He's holding a Bible and asks her name as he gives a sermon from his seat.
Stop the car and kick the person
exactly.
out. If you pick up a hitchhiker and they pull out a Bible, stop the car.
Mm-hmm. From what I recall, there's a episode of one of the anthologies we'll be reviewing where it's pretty much this, where she can't get rid of a hitchhiker.
I mean, to be fair, this is how Scientology begins.
I believe more in Scientology than I do anything in these movies.
Oh, Christ. He reads from the book that Hannah had a son named Samuel, and she says that she's decided kids aren't in her future. He disagrees as she goes off the road, and he disappears from his seat.
Yeah, he's Yoda now.
Yeah, exactly.
Shows up, talks a bunch of shit, and just leaves.
A cop walks up to her car and asks her for her license. When she asks for a doctor instead, the cop says, "Can't you do better than that?" and takes her license. We hear the cop say it's her as she approaches the car and says that she's right. She needs to go see a doctor. And she says that she'll give her a ride. They get out of the car and we see a bird on the ground. Stacy Keach shows up. He examines her and tells her that he was born here and he might die here as he lights a cigarette. Poor Stacy Keach.
Because apparently no one leaves.
No one leaves this fucking town. You're absolutely right.
Real estate next door has to just be non-existent.
All right. One, I can't believe they got Stacy Keach to be in this thing. Every time that they have to reintroduce adults, I'm like, did you read the fucking book? This is a problem. If the plan, if the entire thing is about no one over the age of 19, 18, 17, or 16, depending on which version you're reading and which movie you're in, how the fuck are they adults handling these kids? It pisses me off more and more every time.
Yeah, it only works if you have like one or two because they need like, how vampires need familiars.
Yeah, I mean, and in the last film we had possession. Now if you had it where he who walks behind the rose was possessing adult familiars, for example, you could do it that way. But to have them be adults completely is anathema to what the book is supposed to be. So it just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's not forget, the director doesn't even respect the genre, let alone the property that she's directing.
That's probably why she can't do more than one or two episodes of any series she ever gets hired to do.
Yeah, the fact she did all six episodes of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, A, props to her for actually committing to something fully, and B, that explains why it's so fucking terrible.
Yep. And let's talk about this quote-unquote script. I'm going to get this out here right now. So Franklin says he has a great idea, right? He wants to bring this character back. You guys mentioned that he does it just because he wants to be front and center the entire film. Guess what? He's not. He spends half this movie in a fucking coma. So why is this the idea he's so fucking gung-ho about bringing to screen? This makes no sense to me.
Yeah, he did. He's like Jamie Lee Curtis in that Halloween Kills movie where he spent 90% of the movie in the hospital.
Yes.
To me, I think it's because what he was probably hoping to do after this. I mean, once you're reestablished, and I mean, to be fair, Children of the Corn, he is synonymous with it, that look, and, you know, from that original. And so I think he was hoping to be just the face of the franchise going forward.
We learn that her birthday is tomorrow, and that the bump on her head is just that, and that nothing's wrong with her. The doctor tells her to do yourself a favor and go back to California, as whatever she's looking for here, she will be disappointed in the result.
Hear, hear, I agree.
That should be on the back of the box.
We found a lot of quotes from the back of the box during these podcasts. She finds a, what's this, a fetus in a jar?
This is what one of the failed Snoke clones.
She walks around the hospital and sees kids and or pregnant gals in each room. Someone springs out and tells her that only you can stop him as he chases her up some stairs and into the next hallway.
Yeah, now this one is just going for like the cheapest of jump scares. Like these are so cheap that you have to dig through the $5 Walmart bin to the point where you most likely will have to amputate your hand because you can't find it and will lose circulation.
And again, I'm having the same issue here that we had with the last film where we are focused on the wrong fucking person. I don't care about this chick. And we're finding this little plight that she's in, and it's just like, you're calling this Isaac's Return, and we're just spending more than half the film with this broad.
Yeah, it's like Batman Returns, .. to his own movie.
Yes.
Isaac Returns, .. for about 5 minutes, and then goes back to sleep.
So this guy grabs a hold of her, and we're hearing whispers of, only you can stop Isaac. We cut to Isaac in a hospital bed. He wakes up as she backs out of the room. We learn that he's in a coma even though his eyes are open. I wonder if this hunky leather jacketed dude is going to play into the story, guys.
Oh my
yeah,
god.
Of course he's in a vegetative state.
Yes.
Freaking orderly sideburns. Holy hell, this dude just looks like Stephen Moyer from True Blood. Mm. Just a goofy looking son of a bitch. But yeah, he's in my notes as orderly sideburns through the rest of this.
By the way, is now actually married to Anna Paquin in real life.
Yeah, I did good for him. Just, wow. Nice pull.
Yeah, that's what we call marrying above your level.
As they say in wrestling, he knows how to sell. We learn that this guy's name is Gabriel. Oh, boy. As he walks her out.
Yeah, what's this going?
Yeah, as he walks her out, and he tells her to stay out of trouble, and she drives off. We then learn that, Matt, you're going to love this. We learn that the prophecy says she needs to learn all about what's happening for herself. You love these prophecies.
Lord, now we're introducing prophecies.
Yes.
Bad enough, we already have scripture that changes on a dime with some crayons, and now we're introducing the fucking prophecy. Yes. Someone will bring balance to the cornfield. There's the light side that is not touched by the sunlight, then there's the dark side that can't grow.
Somehow Isaac returns.
She's pursued by a rundown truck as she stops right in the cornfield. And by the way, the directing in this. Matt, you've already called out that she doesn't really commit to anything. I don't think she committed to this either, because this directing in this movie is pretty bad. We were cutting from when she's being pursued to different angles, but yet we're not really on the exact scene itself. We're just kind of moving the camera. It's really poorly directed.
This movie is on par with The Mangler 3 as far as a absence of direction.
Wow, you compared it to Mangler 3.
Yeah, I know. What an honor. And I now have to apologize to Mangler 3.
She continues down the road as she stops and another dead crow is at her feet. We see someone put a pillow over Isaac as he's let out. And then she comes to the desk of a rundown hotel. And what customer service this is, huh?
Yeah, of course the boyfriend is named Matt because I have to be associated with both.
We talked about Garrett for the entire second film. So the guy gives her a key and asks why she needs a sheriff, and she takes it, saying, never mind. God damn, the writing in this. Holy shit, no wonder why this is his only fucking script. Keach says that nothing's changed, but she says that since she's been here, he will. And this is when Isaac finally wakes up. We cut back to Hannah as she gets in her car and a kid appears behind her. Meanwhile, we go back to Isaac, who is realizing that he is indeed awake after 19 years, boys.
In 19 years.
The sheriff says that she never lost faith and that he has a perfect son. And then he says that she's prepared his son for everything. Cut to a weird distorted shot of Hannah driving and then back to the hospital as Hannah walks the halls and hears whispering that if she moves, her visions will come true as Gabriel appears.
This movie is going by Nightmare 5 logic between introducing the kid. Mm-hmm. You know, there's questions about, oh, is this going to be being reborn through a child in possession? It's just, this movie is such a hodgepodge of ideas, but because of that, I never know where it's going because it feels like it's going down 20 different roads at the same time.
Gabriel says it's a small town, so maybe she shouldn't keep visiting Isaac. She asks why he hasn't been killed, and then she explores where her mother actually is. We get a Jerry Springer Show reference because that was big in 1999 as they continue looking through the files, and Jake comes in with an axe. Gabriel leads him out as he whispers, Hannah begat Samuel. Oh boy. Isaac starts having visions as well as we cut to Hannah laying down as someone enters her hotel room and leaves. Boy, oh boy, we talked about this in the fourth movie, but how many of these fucking nightmares and things are we going to get in this? I tell you, if you guys had a, if we, there was a Children of the Corn drinking game and you drank every single time someone had a nightmare, you would probably die.
Oh yeah, this is like part three with the dreams, or no, the four, yeah. Right? The dreams within dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it's lazy. It's somebody writes something down like, ooh, good idea. Can we make it work in the film? No. Ah, fuck it, make it a dream sequence then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, to be fair, that's Dario Argento's entire mantra.
Pretty much.
Yeah, good point.
She trails him and then gets out, and boy, this chick has balls. We see a kid with a machete. He asks for a spare gas can as his bike is out of gas. He tells her about the harvest and that Gabriel is going to be there. She passes as Hannah asks whose truck that is. He replies that that is Rachel Colby's.
I thought that they were going to be so desperate to link to the first movie. This is the truck that the mechanic was working on.
Oh my God. Before he gets killed. Oh my God. Wow. I didn't.
Nothing, I go into these movies expecting like the lowest of the low. And in a movie that's already reeking of desperation, this is opening the garbage can and just inhaling the most toxic fumes possible.
She spots Rachel in the graveyard as the sheriff runs her off. Hannah walks up to the grave and it reads, Baby Colby, 1978. Hannah enters her shower and sees Leave or Die written on the walls. The sheriff takes Rachel to Isaac, and she says, Your prophecy ended with the death of my baby. Rachel says that she left his side because he took her family, but he responds that you had an obligation to he who walks behind the rose. Dun, dun, dun. And Isaac, by the way, John Franklin, just as bad here as he was in the first film. I found him creepy in the first film. Even though he was like 23 years old and playing a kid, I found his presence kind of creepy. But here, 15 years later, he has not learned to read a line any better. This is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's flat, it's dry. If he didn't look the way that he does, there's no way they would have even brought him back.
Rachel, I can't believe they even agreed to the script, though. That's the thing that gets me. He says he has an idea, and this is his idea. And he shouldn't even write the script, for God's sake.
No one at Dimension Home Video is reading shit before they give $30 and a video camera to go shoot this thing.
You're not wrong. Rachel leaves, and Isaac says that tonight she will see a whole new generation grow to love He Who Walks. We cut to a very yummy-looking dinner as Keach tells Rachel if it wasn't for a little creative paperwork, she'd still be in jail. If it
wasn't for a little creative paperwork, Stacy Keach would not be in this.
You're not kidding. Gabriel asks Hannah if she's sure Rachel's her mother as she opens a trunk and sees more dead birds. But of course, it's just some more visions. Gabriel suggests that he talk to Rachel if it means Hannah sticks around, and we hear our first Jim Jones and David Koresh references in this series. He tells her to get some sleep, and she just smirks at him. The doctor says Rachel doesn't need to bring him dinner anymore. And then we see the doctor turn off the water as Isaac appears. He tells Isaac to leave her alone and that she took her from this town and away from him. As water continues to fall, and Isaac asks if he's ready to pay for his actions. He's then electrocuted, but goddamn. You know, we talked last week that while I thought the effects were kind of missing Screaming Mad George, there was at least some splatter and there was at least some blood. These deaths in this movie are fucking bloodless.
Yeah, no, they could not afford the Karo syrup it would have taken to do anything. It's surprisingly tame for an R-rated direct-to-video film. The cussing is not there, there's no nudity, there's no blood. This thing might as well just be on late-night TV and network TV at that.
Yeah, this feels like it was made for, like, CBS public broadcasting. This feels like the edit that you do so you can air these types of movies on regular television.
Yep.
And it's not even lit well. This movie, and Adam, I know you complain about this a lot, but I'm agreeing with you here. It's almost completely dark the entire fucking time.
You need to get lit well to sit through this film.
Isaac tells his son that he's proud of him and that the prophecy will now be fulfilled. I can see Matt just kicking things every time prophecy is mentioned.
I'm like, this whole movie, I'm squirming on my couch.
Yeah.
Every time I hear the word prophecy, I think of that VHS cover with Christopher Walken and the prophecy. That's all I can see.
I keep expecting, they use the word prophecy so much, it might as well be a Harry Potter movie.
Get a foot close up as Hannah wakes up and is told that towels are now in her room. She's also told that Gabriel is waiting for her at the coffee shop as a kid enters her room.
Why is there a coffee shop in a town run by kids?
Who knows? Isaac walks with Matt as Isaac is in his...
No, he does not. I would dropkick that son of a bitch.
As Isaac is now in his old getup, and he says that he knows that no force is as great as he who walks behind the rose. Meanwhile, Hannah plays chicken with Gabriel's car and drives into the fields. She says that he could have killed them both, which is where he wants to be.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
Matt says that his lineage goes back to Isaac, and Hannah needs to go find hers as he drops a shovel at her feet. She digs into the grave Rachel was at as she sees blood drip on her. She looks up, and there's a body in the tree. So we're doing the old Halloween 6 gag here, where we look up, and there's the blood.
Well, it is the 6th installment, so at least it's tracking.
That's true. Rachel says that she can't do this as there is no turning back and that the prophecy will start. She goes on to say that Hannah's visions are real and they mean he who walks behind the rose will awaken. Rachel tells her to go back. She then says that Isaac wants Hannah to be the mother of a superior race and that it is a mistake for her to come to Gatlin. Jesus fucking Christ, we're getting superior races involved in this too.
Yeah, now they're bringing eugenics into the he who walks behind the rose lore. I mean, they might as well open up that book and it's the cover of Mein Kampf with the amount of...
Yeah, right. Hannah kneels down and sees that the casket is empty. We then see Isaac appear and say it's now time for salvation. Matt kneels...
Oh, the movie's over? Thank God.
Matt kneels down as the sheriff tells her to embrace your birthright and they brand his hand.
Well, don't put words in my mouth. I've been on my knees plenty of times.
Hannah is walking through the rows as kids surround her. She screams at them to leave her alone as she's injected with something from a syringe and falls. Why was she even fucking here?
Of all places, of all things, after everything she's learned, why the fuck would she decide that she's going to go walking through a cornfield?
By herself.
By herself.
With no protection. This is the ultimate example of why don't people just fucking leave?
Yeah, I mean, it's the old Eddie Murphy bit, right? Where
that white people.
Yeah, you walk into the Amityville house, it's like, oh, what a nice house. Get out. Oh, too bad we can't stay, baby. It's the same thing. Like, why don't they fucking leave?
Fucking white people.
This is why 8 Paranormal Activity movies exist, or however many there are.
Where was I? Okay, Hannah wakes up to Isaac welcoming her, and he calls upon he who walks behind the rose to give her life. She is also branded, and the prophecy is written, so it shall be that her and Matt will be together. Hey, congratulations, Matt. Sprinklers turn on as she's stalked by a motorcycle, and Rachel says that Isaac is a fraud. He has no power other than what they give him.
And what is it about motorcycles and films like this that just don't fit? I don't know, something about motorcycles, something about these type of motorcycles, they come across as douchey as Homeboy's goatee in the last film. It's just awkward.
Thinking of Nightmare 5, right, Matt?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, with the Tetsuo, the Metal Man homage.
I'm going back to this, but it's in my notes, and I have to say it again. Just after this scene, I had to put in that, goddamn, this is shot so poorly. All of this, it's so amateurly made. Morgan comes to help Hannah, and she escapes on a bike with Gabriel as Morgan is taken to Isaac, and she falls crying in his arms.
But crying in quotes. Nobody in these movies knows how to fucking cry.
You're not kidding. Meanwhile, poor Morgan is brought before Matt, who can't bring himself to kill her, so Isaac, after expressing his disappointment, does it himself. Was that a yawn I just heard?
No, that was me.
Okay.
That was
scoffing.
Just shrugging.
Gotcha. We then see Hannah get nursed back to health by Gabriel as she says that she would do anything for a shower right now. And then she gets one. Kind of, even if it's with clothes on. Very unsexy scene that's, again, so poorly shot with extreme close-ups and quick cuts. I can't believe this fucking scene. I can't believe this scene.
How do you fuck up a horror movie when you have these opportunities? I'm not saying that titillation always has a place, but horror films, at least of this kind, by their nature, are designed for that. And maybe it's, you know, when you get a female director for this kind of thing, you take all that away, but you need some kind of just exploitation, and this has nothing.
You're absolutely right, and that's a big complaint I have about this, and a few of these films, is that there is nothing that really makes them horror films. You know, I'm surprised a lot of them are even rated R. You know, and yeah, there's some cursing in this, and, you know, there's more blood in this than it was last week, than the last film, but at the same time, you're absolutely right. The titillation is gone. Like, everything that makes a horror film, everything that made horror films such a taboo thing to watch when we were kids and parents wouldn't like us watching them is not here.
Yeah.
Matt, I'm sorry, you're going to say something.
Oh, you have to apologize to me for this bullshit. You can apologize for making me watch this.
We then get some Back to the Future type shots of clocks as she's, I'm guessing, having an orgasm in this fucking shower with clothes on. Hannah shows up freshly showered and gets snuck up on by Matt, complete with a hat and machete. Matt and Gabriel, they admire the weapons as they kiss. Okay, wasn't expecting this.
Hole's a hole.
Matt then grabs a huge scythe as Gabriel says, don't let me down. Hannah hops on the bike with Gabriel and they take off as metal music plays and Matt falls on a massive scythe.
Horrible angle.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that should have been shot and could have been kind of cool, but the angle that were chosen for the actual photography was the worst possible angle you could have taken.
At the very least, they should have done the cheap gimmick of, like, this is the kind of kill you do with, like, 3E.
Yep.
Definitely. Gabriel walks in the hospital as we cut to Rachel being held hostage in a basement. Isaac says, you can't escape the prophecy as they stab Rachel. Meanwhile, Hannah is approached by the man in the hospital who's just expressing gibberish. Gabriel confronts Jesse and kills him Michael Myers Halloween 4 style by crushing his face.
That was...
a choice.
It was a choice, but I'd say 40 of the 50 bucks that they had got spent on this one little spot.
And the water in the shower scene.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking, I'll say that. So I was like, oh shit, didn't expect that.
Mm-hmm. Matt's walking the halls and calling Isaac's name as Hannah finds Isaac and Rachel. Isaac tells her that Isaac sacrifices himself to Isaac himself, who is a power greater than him, as Gabriel has Cora shoot herself.
That one kind of blew me away too. Like, that was that chair of suicide. I was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ramping up a little bit here as we get towards the end.
Yeah, but we're about ready to get the big reveal here. Let's get to this. So,
yeah, this is the Vince McMahon higher power reveal.
It was me, Austin. Gabriel approaches Isaac as Gabriel says the prophecy was his and that it was fulfilled. He tells Hannah to kill Isaac as Rachel tells her not to do it. Rachel refuses and drops the scissors as Gabriel says they were destined. So this is the big idea that John Franklin had, huh? His big idea was to make the fact that he's returned a huge red herring and he's not the one who was prophesied. It is actually this Gabriel character. Oh boy.
On the surface, not a bad choice because you get people excited and at least you give them something different. But it's the execution, it's the age, it's the quality, it's the acting lack of talent that we have here. It's everything that goes around it. I mean, on the surface, okay, decent idea. But everything around it is just so subpar.
Matt, would you agree that's at least a good idea?
To an extent. But I can think of other instances where they've done this similar twist of the person you thought this was about, turns out it's about someone else. I mean, hell, Star Wars kind of does that indirectly. But yeah, I was getting massive, like, freaking Palpatine vibes throughout this entire movie. His plan in this is about as convoluted as it was in that last episode 9.
He forces Isaac down, and we learn that Gabriel is indeed he who walks behind the rose. Now we're getting some weird Freddy shtick as he holds Isaac hostage. Like, we got some weird Freddy lines going on here.
Yeah, just no uses of the word bitch.
Exactly. Gabriel stabs Isaac as he approaches Rachel. He asks her if this was what she really wanted as she stabs him, and he forces the blade all the way down his torso. He's then bleeding from the mouth and falls. But he gets up and applauds his own performance as he says, boom, and explosions start happening. What is it about these movies and fucking explosions? They happen in every single one. Here's where the other $10 went, Adam.
Yeah, and they make about as much sense as everything that came before this movie. Fucking why? Yeah.
We're hearing Hannah say something that lived under rows of corn now lives in her. They walk toward the sun and God knows where as credits roll on a very undeniably and unnecessarily convoluted Children of the Corn 666 Isaac's Return. Boys, anything to say about this ending?
Best people, safe sex. Condom up. It saves you from the horse.
Gee, with advice that prophetic, you should have told that to the screenwriters so they weren't bored to write this nonsense.
Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Children of the Corn, 666, Isaac's Return, Adam?
Oh, boy. You know, as this thing started, I was starting to get a little more intrigued because, okay, we're doing a little bit different. John Franklin back as Isaac, it wasn't being done in the way that I expected. I liked the character that they had playing, the actress that they had playing Hannah, seeing Nancy Allen here. I was like, okay, they're putting some effort into this. Boy, was I wrong. Shots don't line up well. The continuity doesn't match. The thought that they put into this is just thrown right out the window into a cornfield to rot away. Other than just having he who walks behind the rose and bringing him to flesh, the rest of this doesn't matter. It doesn't really make sense. This is, you might as well have Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, every woman impregnated by the demon seed, you know, by the end of the film is really the only thing that this has to say. And the rest of it is, this film is as stupid as this will sum it up. At one point when she's trying to dig up a grave, she does it with a flathead shovel. Anybody that has ever used a flathead shovel to dig a hole knows that it is a fucking exercise in futility. And that's what this film is. This film is digging a hole with a flat-headed spade shovel. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it's a shame because I do think the potential was there, but it was squandered at everything. I don't know if it's the worst that we've gotten so far, but it... Man, it's really not good. I'm giving this a 3. It was nice to see Nancy Allen. It was nice to see John Franklin, even though it was wasted. But, man, this thing is stupid. And I think that's the worst thing it has going for it. It's just stupid. So, 3 on 10 for Children of the Corn 666.
3 stalks of corn out of 10 from Mr. Adam Bunch. He who gets cranky during podcasts, Matt Goudreau, what do you have to say, sir?
This is one of those instances. You can't blame me for being mad about this. You dare say this is unwarranted rage. So, it's a good thing this movie is about motherhood and prophecies because this baby needs to be thrown out with the bathwater and never to be seen again. One thing I will say about this franchise is that it's amazing that with all these movies ending with explosions near cornfields, how are people not just showered with popcorn? Between the heat and all the physics of it, although here I am demanding logic and reasoning in a movie that incorporates someone coming back after 15 years just because they needed money. I feel like this should be an episode of the People's Court. So, I don't know how to score this. I guess I'm going to go with Adam and give it a 3 because on the corn scale, I think this is the worst one. I would say it's actually pretty cemented at the bottom. Like, I almost want to take the flathead shovel, because I feel like this series has flatlined at this point. You know, Isaac spent a lot of this 18 years in a coma, and goddammit, I wish I was right along there with him. Hell, put me next to Cartman at Hell's Pass Hospital and just let the seasons change and time pass on, because I didn't find much to enjoy here. Even when it gets, much like the last one, when it kind of loses its mind, it's not really in an enjoyable way, because I've seen these types of reveals and possessions both in this series and in other ones that are far superior. So, I don't know how they come back from this. More importantly, I don't know if they get much worse than this, and if they do, Godspeed to those, because I don't, you're going to have to carry me like Sam carrying Frodo into Mount Doom to get through the last five of these. I feel like we're halfway, and if that's the case, this is the Mount Everest of retrospectives, because my legs feel like they're broken, like freaking Paul Sheldon at the end of Misery. That's how I feel. So I have to give this a 3 and hope that it's the lowest score I give.
Now, is that Paul Sheldon from the novel or Paul Sheldon from the movie? Because there's two differences there.
Ask me in the comments. Okay. Maybe both will apply.
All right. By the time we're done. I will leave it at that. You know, I hate saying this. Call me the parade of optimism. But I think out of the three of us, I was more optimistic about this. Because I think if you have somebody who is angry at Hollywood for not casting somebody of his ilk and kind of feeling like he's been picked on his whole career and he wants to get something going, I think there is some art to be had if you were to put your mind to it. But here's the thing. I think there was no real mind being put to this. I think this is just somebody coming in and trying to get something else to sign at Comic-Con or at any horror con. I found this movie laborious to get through. And I hate the fact that we have this character from the first film coming back, and this is what he comes back to. He's not even the center of his own film. I feel like this is one of those movies where I came in wanting to really, really like it, and I didn't like anybody on screen. I found it poorly shot. It's poorly directed, very poorly lit. There's not even any music to grab onto. I mean, there's some kills, but goddamn, we have a fully closed shower scene. When does that happen in fucking horror films? It's ridiculous. This movie is pretty terrible on every front, and I hate the fact that John Franklin came back and this is what he turned out. It's a piece of shit, really. I know I'm going to end up having fun with at least one of the next few films, but this, after it was over, I was like, oh god, five more? Really? Even my completionist himself was like, fuck this. Call this Children of the Corn 333, because this is a really terrible experience I wouldn't recommend anybody go through. Even with the continuity of this being the same character, I just didn't find anything to like. So yeah, 3 out of 10 for Children of the Corn 666, Isaac's Return. All right, next week, we're not even doing numbers anymore, boys. Next week, it is Children of the Corn Revelation. I don't have any idea what to expect with this one. Adam, as somebody who wasn't coming in too optimistic, do you have any expectations when we get to Revelation?
I got the expectation that I'm going to forget which Children of the Corn film that I watch or that I need to watch next. That's what I expect, because I'm fucking confused. I tried to look up Children of the Corn 7, and my computer was like, why? And then it gave me a list of shit that I don't understand. So it's Revelation or Revolution? Revelation, right?
Yeah, Revelation.
Revelation, and then I don't even know where we go from there. I don't know.
One after that. Now they're just taking fucking Bible books.
Genesis. Oh, geez. So Revelation. Oh, then I expect we're going to get Bible verses and shit that makes no sense.
Prophecies.
We're going to get, you know what, I hope we get back to corn. I've actually kind of missed the corn a little bit, so maybe we'll get back to that. I got no expectations, none. I expect that I'm going to be hoping that I could do this at a 2x speed to get through the rest of these. I want corn in space. Jason X, this motherfucker, take us to outer space.
Matt, do you have any optimism next week?
I read the plot description just to prepare myself. I read the little sentence or two, and the short answer is no. I mean, goddamn, they're even going back to similar plots they've done already, and those weren't even done especially well. So the only thing that intrigues me is there's an apartment building in this community.
Yes. And there's a reason this character's there, but we'll get to that next time. Boys, we are more than halfway through the Children of the Corn retrospective. And by the way, by the time we're done with this, we are going to get through it, and next year there's going to be some good King on the horizon. I guarantee we're going to talk some the stuff that made King popular in the upcoming 80s. By the time he was done with this story, will be talked about next year, and there are some good things to be had there. But until next time, when we get to Children of the Corn Revelation, you ought to know better. These podcasts will kill you. Thank you, boys.
We must sacrifice them both tonight.
Amos was satisfied. Oh. We need the woman. She'll bring the man to us.
No. He must be taken without her. We cannot remove her from this place. It is holy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Why don't you put that in your gob and smoke it?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Question not my judgment, Malachi. I am the giver of his word.
And keep coming back as the boys will continue going through the works of Stephen King in publication order.
He wants you too, Malachi.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice. It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You guys all belong in an asylum somewhere. Loony bin. Where are your parents?
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, where we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the Mad Max movies, Avatar, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
You are a sinner. You are the fire of the corn. It will do you no good to curse me.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
You know not the laws. He speaks them only to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Assuming that it's ever stopped.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You know, you're gonna keep visiting Isaac. It's probably something you should know. It's a small town. People are gonna talk.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
But you've come back to us.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
That'll make us just like them.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
There ain't nothing out there, Mordecai, except a lot of corn. Stupid old corn.
See you around.
All right, guys. You ready to hit the halfway point of this retrospective?
I'd rather hit the end point.
this had nothing in it that made me go, ooh, you know, Franklin's back, Ezekiel? Isaac. Ooh, Isaac's back. You need a, oh my God, what's the movie with the frickin' monkey who's got the disease? Outbreak. You need Dustin Hoffman to show up and frickin' just...
Of course he's in a vegetative state.
Yes.
Frickin' orderly sideburns. Holy hell, this dude just... He looks like What's-His-Fuck from True Blood. Not Skarsgård, but the one that actually married Anna Paquin.
Somerhalder, whatever his name is?
No,
Anna Paquin's husband. The one that plays the lead.
Just
a goofy-looking son of a bitch.
Stephen Moyer.
Stephen Moyer, yeah.
Say it again, Adam. It looks like who? Because I want to edit that in. Looks like who from True Blood?
Looks like Stephen Moyer from True Blood.
Mm. But here, 15 years later, he has not learned to read a line any better. This is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Adam? Adam, do you have anything to say about Isaac's performance here?
I think we finally broke him.
I think we did. Yep. I think he fell.
it's flat. It's dry.
Why don't people just fucking leave?
Yeah. I mean, it's the old Eddie Murphy bit, right? Where
this is not white people.
Yeah, you walk into the Amityville house. It's like, oh, what a nice house. Get out. Oh, too bad we can't stay, baby. It's the same thing. Like, why don't they fucking leave?
Fucking white people.
This is why 8 Paranormal Activity movies exist, or however many there are.
You don't want to do that series?
There's a couple of those I do enjoy. Okay.
From what I remember, there was like those movies are like one and done. Like, you watch it, you get your thrill, and then that's it. Like, there's no rewatching them. That's what I remember.
Well, yeah, because you know, by their very format, they're hard to rewatch.
Yeah, I remember seeing the first one in theaters, and that was like one of the most visceral experiences, just seeing it with a full crowd and the people just responding to everything.
Yeah, those are made to be.
Yeah. And then
you watch them by yourself, though. There's a little bit of, like, if you watch it by yourself for the first time, it can be unsettling, but
yeah. And then we rented it from Redbox, me and my girlfriend at the time. We rented it, and then we took it home, and we're like, you know what, this isn't as scary as we thought it was.
Yeah, then I made my own version and uploaded it to Pornhub using the same equipment.
And there's my review of Paranormal. Okay,
I'd be a virgin for all those, so we might have to do it for just that reason. Yep.
Just heard my dissertation on them. Maybe eventually we'll get to them.
Yeah, my version will be a Patreon exclusive.
Sounds like it'd be a Pornhub exclusive.
Speaking of Pornhub.
Where was I? Okay, Hannah wakes up. Until next time, when we get to Children of the Corn Revelation, you ought to know better. These podcasts will kill you. Thank you, boys.
Ain't that the truth?
Now.